It's been 25 years since the movie Scream was released and became an instant hit with critics and audiences around the world. Wes Craven and Kevin Williamson's knowing slasher spawned three sequels and set a young, hip and scary trend that immediately changed the landscape of cinema. Now with a new installment of the record-breaking saga on the way in 2022, this podcast will celebrate the original release and what came next, maybe with a few twists and turns along the way. I'm Alex James and this is the Woodsboro Podcast. Cynthia Bergstrom was the costume designer on Scream.
And it was funny because the painting, you know, the ghost face creature is in black, and I'd always seen the robe as black, but Wes wanted it white. and he wanted it to be like ripstop fabric, like Mylar. I was like, that's really going to be messy, you know, with blood. And I mean, can you imagine how gory that would have been?
You can hear her stories from her time on Scream in episode 3 of the Woodsboro Podcast. And now I'm delighted to say that Cynthia is back. And we're going to take a little detour away from Woodsboro and head to Sunnydale. You don't need me to tell you how hugely popular Buffy the Vampire Slayer was and still is.
I think Buffy definitely set the tone to begin with. And then the network started buying other scripts that were like that, that were teen angst oriented.
Cynthia spent 5 years on the show and was an integral part in creating the show's iconic look and creating its success too. And now you're going to hear the inside story on what it takes to bring a show like Buffy to life, how the 90s gave rise to TV shows and movies that spoke to a young audience, and how Cynthia ended up working on one of the biggest TV shows of all time.
I mean, big things were happening. You know, I was also the stylist for the WB, and then the WB came to me and they asked me to be head of wardrobe for the network.
Above everything else, Cynthia is lovely. She's insightful, savvy, and now quite reflective.
I mean, I would never work for the man again. I think about the things that he said the show represents, and then I think about what he did.
She's played a huge part in defining these sections of 90s pop culture, and it seems like when she joined Buffy in 1997, she knew she would be on that show for a long time.
I mean, I figured. I didn't know. When I came on the second season, at the time, we had only been greenlit for 13 episodes. And then we got the back nine while we were shooting. And so it was super exciting. The back nine just meant that we were going to go for 20, 21 or 22 episodes. So I did have a vision. I would talk with Joss about new characters that were coming on board, and he would give me sort of like the backstory or what he wanted to see. And then I would create it. Sometimes I would get no direction whatsoever, so I just had to create it. I think one of the hardest characters for me to create, believe it or not, was Kendra. But Kendra, for some reason, I don't know. I feel like it was a last minute decision to go the direction of Kendra. Like I feel like I got the script and the next day she was being cast and the day after that she was to shoot. So I didn't get a lot of time to think about who she was. And then in comes Faith. So Faith kind of took that slot. I mean, because I would be working 12, 14 hour days. And I mean, we all were, obviously. And putting out fire sometimes in the middle of the night until I just said to people, you put out that fire. Don't wake me up at 2. You have my permission to do what you need to do. I won't get mad. You know, we could see the press that was happening. I could see what was happening for Sarah, the movies, the different guest appearances. I would dress her for some of those.
So was there also an element of that? Because they were young and they were going to be seen growing and going through high school and college, does that kind of help with the mindset from your perspective as well, that here's an opportunity to show people mature through how they look?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely. Each season, like I wanted to take it to the next level. I mean, they would be freshmen, sophomores, juniors, seniors, and then freshmen in college. And it's just like in life, when you go into a different grade, you have those two or three months off for the summer, great transformation would take place. Like, I wanted to show through the costumes that they were maturing, they were growing, they were transitioning, they were not little kids anymore.
Could you pick your favorite for Sarah Michelle, the most iconic, in your opinion?
You know what's so interesting is there are so many costumes that I don't remember. Like, people will write to me, they'll send me pictures, and they'll want to know about something, and I'm like, huh, I didn't know I did that. I mean, it was 5 seasons. So what, 100 some odd episodes, maybe 3 to 4 costume changes per, plus all the other characters and and the extras, it was a lot. I think if I were to pick a season, I would probably go with season four, season five would be my favorites. So I think the leather trousers, I mean, we had a lot of pants. There were some stretch pants that were really popular at the time that we used. And then the leather, it was probably like a leatherette with a bit of stretch to it, but the maroon leather pants and the black top was a big hit. And, you know, everything had to have, it was like form and function, because I wanted her to look good. I always wanted her to look good. That was so super important. And, you know, like a superhero, she's kind of like the first superhero since Wonder Woman of the, was it 80s or 70s? I don't recall, but
yeah.
So, and she had to move and she had to kick and she had to wear stunt pads. And sometimes we used, I forget what they're called, but, you know, she'd be flying through the air. And then I had the two other stunt people to think about. What were they going to be doing? So all of that had to be incorporated. And then, you know, she had to look good.
So here they are in the eye of this storm, this Buffy storm. And was it a bubble, or were they open to the world about how popular the show had become?
So we didn't have social media back then, but we had the media. And I could see what was happening for the actors, and they were doing the circuit, you know, the talk shows and magazine articles, and I would dress them or style them for different projects that they were doing. And then for me, the requests just started coming in. It would be either fan mail coming in. A lot came from the UK. At that time, most of it came from the UK. And then I started to get requests to do radio interviews and magazine interviews. And then I was on a few talk shows, and I was like, wow, this is really something, because I'd never had that before. I'd never experienced it personally. It was just so new to me, and I didn't capitalize on it. And I wish I had. I went with the flow, which was the best I could do at the time, because I was also running a show. But so many times I was invited to Comic-Con and I was like, what's this? I don't have time. And even years after, when I would be on other shows, I'd still be asked to do Comic-Con, and I just didn't get it. And now I wish that I had, because I think it would have been really fun. I did everything that was asked of me, but I think had I had the wherewithal and maybe the confidence that I have now, I might've really capitalized on what I was doing. Like, there was a costume manufacturer that came to Fox, and these were the first Buffy costumes and Buffy dolls that were made. And I had to give them my designs, but I also had to sign a clause that I wouldn't get anything for it. And because of Scream, I had to sign the same sort of document. I just thought that was par for the course. And, you know, perhaps if I had talked to my agent, we could have worked a different deal where I would have gotten compensation. And I think now it's different. I think costume designers do get compensated if their designs are mass marketed, at least they get a piece of it. I mean, big things were happening. I was, you know, I was also the stylist for the WB, and then the WB came to me and they asked me to be head of wardrobe for the network. And it was going to be like a threefold position. They wanted me to be in charge of all costuming for all WB shows. I was like, I don't know if that's going to go over so well with other costume designers. They wanted me to do on-air celebrity interviews. And I was pretty shy back then. I was camera shy. And so I was like, really? Okay. But I was down for it. I was like, okay, we can do it. And then the other thing is they wanted me to be part of revamping the WB stores. So I would have been in charge of all the apparel and merchandising it as well. So, I mean, these it was like a huge, and at the time, I don't know if I just had limited thinking. I don't know if I was part psychic. I don't know, maybe all of the above, but I was like, how is this going to happen?
They obviously wanted everybody to look a certain way.
I think it was that. And if I may be so bold to say, I think they just really liked what I was creating on Buffy and what I was creating for the WB, and they liked my style, and they wanted, maybe it's what we were saying, so they wanted consistency of that style, so to speak, for the other shows. They wanted their other shows to have the same, I guess, panache and style as Buffy.
So you'd be talking about Gilmore Girls, Charmed, Dawson's Creek, things like that.
Yeah. It was a big, and I just was like, how could that possibly, now I can see it clearly. Like, I totally get it.
The immense power of the WB style, the shows, the talent, the influence, this network as a whole, it kind of took on a life of its own, and it seems like a daunting task. And I wondered whether anything like this had ever been done before.
So, yeah, so I discovered that, like, back in the 30s and the 40s, the studios did have head costume designers that would read the script and then give the overall direction to wardrobe direction to the costume designers that were hired.
You'd never be able to sleep.
I was young back then. I mean, even today, it's like a design director. It's like creative director. It's like setting the creative tone. But you have to take into consideration, I mean, so every showrunner has set the tone for the show. Like the showrunner has an idea of what they want the show to look like. And then you have the producers, then you have the director, then you have the talent, then you have the below the line crew, the production designer, the costume designer. So it would have been groundbreaking. It would have been really cool. I don't know if it would work today. It might. So I think, who knows? Maybe it'll still happen.
At this point, I was going to ask Cynthia about how important a role Buffy had played in defining the concept of a teen on TV during this era. But with the concept of the WB putting all its main crop of young adult shows under a united umbrella, it seemed like the network had almost developed a one-fits-all perception.
Yeah, and then Buffy left the network.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I think the CW, which was the WB, it evolved into the CW, I think they're still that demographic. And they're still known as like the network that produces teen shows, younger shows. But I think Buffy definitely set the tone to begin with. Just, I think it was really the first show, and then they started buying the first teen drama, and then the network started buying other scripts that were like that, that were teen angst oriented.
It was happening on TV and it was happening in film. The era was rife with Scream imitation and teen-led projects. Some good, some not so good. The Faculty, Cruel Intentions, I Know What You Did, some of the stronger ones. But aside from the obvious financial benefits to this trend, what was happening in society that led to this?
I've been thinking about that question. And I think, like I've asked myself, like each time I get a request, more so from fans, like, what are they still watching? I thought maybe I should just ask them. And then I thought, well, they do tell me why. I think that Buffy and the other teen shows of the 90s, I think they're just so relatable, and they're fun and lighthearted on one hand. On the other hand, they're talking about very serious issues and things that younger people go through and maybe don't have an outlet to express themselves. And seeing, you know, the stars on TV, their beloved characters experience similar situations, and being able to see how they handle those situations. It was new back then. I mean, we had Friends. Friends started before any of it. And I think that was sort of our first foray into like that age range. And then we went younger. And I remember Joss said to me that the demons and the vampires were all sort of metaphors for the demons and the sort of blood sucking we do, the soul sucking we do to ourselves, like the inner demons that we struggle with, and, you know, overcoming low self-esteem issues, self-hatred, just whatever comes forward, the not enoughness, the comparing oneself to another. And I mean, that I thought was really profound and really deep and really wonderful. And I thought, great, you know, if people have an outlet and this helps them sort of heal those wounds, or at least pay homage to those wounds. And so I think it's really relatable. And I think, you know, it's still carrying over to today. And I told you last time, like a lot of people have written to me and said, you know, Buffy saved my life. And here, I also think where being gay was shunned on TV, like with Ellen DeGeneres, here we had a female couple in love. And that was really groundbreaking. And there was just no stigma about it. And there was a lot of stigma going on in the 90s. The 90s, it was an easier time. It was definitely a fun time. And things really changed with 9/11. Like the world changed with 9/11. And I'd say 9/11 and technology.
So what's it like being part of a show that's changing the rules of the time? And does that pressure to deliver weigh quite heavy?
Well, on a lighter note, once more with feeling. When we got that script, you know, I thought, wow, I haven't really seen this before in a television show, you know, a dramatic television show about vampires and monsters. And I thought that was really cool. And then I just thought it was so different, like the cheese man and the dry cleaners. And what is Joss talking about? What was this, a dream he had? So, I mean, yeah, definitely there were times when I felt like this is going to have an impact on people. There were sad ones too, like when Tara was killed. That was really hard. That was really hard to shoot. That was hard to prep. It was just like, even talking about it now, it still feels a little traumatic all these years later. You don't kill your heroine, but Wes Craven did it, so.
And how about the pressure on the cast?
I noticed it more with Sarah than any of the others. I mean, she had a lot to do in each episode. And then she had a lot of externals. But I don't think we really felt, I think the overall sense, looking back on it now, is that we were just making the show. And I don't know that we necessarily felt any pressure to be anything than in the moment and put together a great show.
Sometimes the glamour and glitz of Hollywood movies and TV seems so far removed from real life that during these podcast conversations, I've wanted to take the chance to find out how my guests ended up doing what they do.
So I'm also a bit of a nerd. When I was growing up, I loved to sit and read. So I used to love to read the encyclopedia. Like, that was my favorite pastime. We didn't have computers when I was growing up. And I just would gather so much information, you know, anywhere from dogs to how to take a radio apart and put it back together to clothing. And so I would just study the different periods of in history of clothing. And so when I was getting ready to think about what I wanted to do with my life, I knew I wanted a career in fashion. And I said to my mom, you know, who puts the clothes on people in movies and television shows? She explained to me what a costume designer was. And I said, that's what I want to do. And so I ended up not doing that out of the gate. I ended up working in sales at the California Mart. So, you know, I worked for designers that sold to the stores. And I was like, you know what? I want to be a costume designer. How do I make that happen? So I started meeting different stylists, and I would ask them how they are costume designers, how they got started. And then I started dating a producer, and he did commercials. And so he helped me, basically. He introduced me to people, and he taught me how to put a book together. And so I just sat and I sketched, and then what happened, a friend of mine was doing a film, and he said, do you want to be our costume designer? And that was it. They'd had another person on as the costume designer, and I actually went to college with her, and she hated it. And she said, Cynthia, take over for me. And so I did. And the script supervisor taught me how to break down a script. The accountant taught me how to do a budget. I mean, every department taught me how to do my job.
Yeah.
And that was that. And that movie was called Zombie High, with Virginia Madsen and James Wilder. And what was the girl? She was in, it'll come to me. But anyway, it was an 80s nightmare movie about zombies.
It sounds good.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, this is home. This is everything. And, you know, I mean, it was a bit daunting because usually you start out on set and you work your way up, you learn the job. And I didn't. I started out as costume designer, and then I tried for set jobs or assisting jobs moving forward, because I was like, I really want to learn. Mm-hmm. And I just kept getting design jobs. So I was so blessed. It was just meant to be. And you know, there were that sort of imposter syndrome came to play a little bit, because I was like, I haven't earned this. And then 10 years in, I was like, I think I've earned this.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe that with such talent, passion, and legacy, Cynthia no longer works in the field.
So yeah, I was on a show. It was actually with Sarah Ringer in 2011. And it was a really tough show. And there were some things that took place, didn't have anything to do with Sarah, but some things that took place that were rather traumatizing. And not just for me, but my crew that works with me in the day to day, not the set crew. And the show was becoming increasingly difficult. And I was like, I can't do this another 5 years. I'm done. And it was an unfortunate situation with the event. And so I left, and I thought, okay, I'm done with costume design. And I want to go back to school. I had originally wanted to major in psychology. My parents were like, we think you're more creative than that. And they were right. But I thought I'm gonna go back and finish my degree. I had finished my undergrad in like 2006. I had to go back and finish that, and so I was like, I'm gonna major in psychology, which I did, and I got my master's, and then I started coaching, and then I started doing business development and branding, and it just one thing led to another. And I was doing all this sort of this business development work and branding and marketing. And so in between, I was styling commercials and doing small films here and there. So I left. I ended up having quite a severe accident. And I'm laying in bed and I'm like, I gotta get out of LA. I'm going to go home and I'm going to make vegan products. I'm going to sell my vegan desserts at farmers markets and I'm going to live in the wine country. So I did that. And then the fires of 2017 hit and just changed my trajectory. So I left the wine country. I moved to where I am now, just 10 minutes from San Francisco, the Golden Gate Bridge, and back to business development marketing. But I have a plan. I'm moving towards sort of combining my years of film and fashion into something else. And I'm really excited about it. Like it just came to me this week. So it's still in process. There's so much more to life. And I think we're all really here to grow and evolve. I don't think we're here to just buy houses and have nice cars. I mean, I know that. I've known that my entire life. So I'm looking at like, I don't know if I said this the last time we talked, but I'm looking at like, you know, how can I be of service? How can I take everything in my life experience and use that to help others? Because that's really what's enjoyable. Like that's rewarding. And fulfilling. So that's where I'm at.
I think Cynthia would admit that this positive outlook is determined not only by personal experience, but also professional too. She embraces the fans of Scream and Buffy with nothing but love and is happy to chat about her past work on pods, blogs and articles. And I asked her what kind of advice she would give to anyone starting out in her field of work.
To really believe in themselves and to also be solid within themselves. And know that nothing's personal. I think my career really took off when I started trusting myself and not worrying about what other people were thinking. Mm-hmm. You can't live your life trying to please everybody. And I think earlier in my career, because I didn't believe in myself so much because I had that imposter syndrome going on because of my, you know, the way that I moved through the system. But once I was like, yeah, I've got this, everything shifted. But it's not about being cocky and it's not about being egotistical. It's about having a broader perspective and sometimes letting yourself get out of the way and just letting that creative process come through. Everything for me is intuition. And every single thing I do, if I don't listen to my intuition, it's not going to work out as well. Could be good, but it could be better if I would just listen to my intuition. I learned that, you know, the hard way. Now I listen to my intuition no matter what. And it can be hard sometimes. Like sometimes our intuition will tell us to do things that we don't really want to do. We think we know better, but if you just surrender and let the creative process flow. Having the thick skin, I was definitely a lot tougher back in the day. I mean, maybe if I was in the same situation, I'd be tough still. But I think the thick skin comes from just trying to laugh at every situation. People are going to yell at you. People are going to scream at you. You're going to see traumatic events. The industry is great. You know, I loved working in the industry. for the most part.
In 2021, there's new lights on many elements of the film and TV industry. Scream's Rose McGowan was instrumental in the Me Too movement. And of course, Harvey Weinstein was a major player in the production of the Scream saga. More recently, there have been a number of claims made about the behaviour of Buffy creator Joss Whedon on the set of the show, with cast members backing one another in light of the allegations.
There can be a lot of chaos and there's a lot of money on the line, and things have to be done in a timely manner, and people can get upset at the drop of a hat, literally. And that's where the thick skin comes into play. And then you have to have thick skin and not take it personally. And then you also have to not take the abuse. You have to be strong and protect yourself. And unfortunately, as we've seen with the allegations, not everybody was able to protect themselves because there was so much on the line, or they were shocked, or they couldn't believe what was happening, or they were gaslit, you know. That's what really makes my blood boil. But so I think things are changing. I hope things are changing.
And the elephant in the room.
So I will be honest, I didn't see any of it.
Yeah.
And I had my own difficulties, but it was more dealing with a short fuse, and maybe we would have creative differences. But I mean, even through the whole Me Too movement, people would come to me and ask me, or just say, you know, I'm so sorry you had to go through what you went through, or were you ever hit on like that? And the answer is no. No, I never was. And I have my ideas as to why, but it doesn't really matter, because those who were hurt. And that's deeply, deeply distressing. I had heard things while we were shooting, but it was just hearsay. And keep in mind, I was so busy. You know, it was like a machine, what we were creating, and things just had to keep moving. And then when I left Buffy, so I left after the sixth season, and I went to a different show. Buffy had definitely spoiled me. Like, there's never been another show like Buffy and what I was able to do creatively and collectively. But then I started to hear things again. And it was sort of, whoa, that just simply can't be true. And it was hearsay. And it was the stuff that we're talking about today in 2021. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked. And now that I know, I mean, I would never work for the man again.
Yeah.
I think there is a taint on the show, because I think about the things that he said the show represents. And then I think about what he did. And then I just think that is pure evil. Oh my God, are you going to put that on your podcast? You can, because that's how I feel.
Yeah, that's fair.
Onwards. It's just, it's sad. You know, I've studied psychology, and yeah, that doesn't make me an expert per se, but I do have a master's in psychology. And when you look at the psychology behind this, a lot of times what happens is the stuff that people are trying to hide, it sort of works its way out through osmosis. And I think that's the beauty of art. And I think that's the beauty of self-expression, whether it's dark, light, whatever. I think, you know, the bottom line that we can take from the movie and the show is that these were empowered women, young women. And then some got their necks broken in a garage door. I mean, when you think about that, it tells a whole different story. So I think we can enjoy the product. And I think sometimes maybe the product, being a part of the product, gives you credence to bring forth the story. And the story is is a horrific one. Each and every woman's or man's story about this subject is horrific. And it's about power, and it's about control, and it's about ultimately these perpetrators having such dark black holes within themselves. And it's a deep, deep, deep level that I think finally for where it's being addressed. And it's not just women, you know, it's systemic racism. It's so many things that we're dealing with right now. I think all of this is coming to the light of day for healing, for collective healing and shift and growth and change and transformation.
Being able to have these kind of conversations allows a reassessment of the movies and TV shows we've come to love. And you have to hope above everything else that things are changing for the better. And you can tell that Cynthia is optimistic for that change. Cynthia has been an absolute delight on the podcast in the last two episodes. And I'm so happy that she was open to sharing her stories from Scream and Buffy. And I know how important she is to a lot of the fans. So hopefully you've enjoyed it too. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Woodsboro Podcast. Please rate and subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And if you'd like to join the conversation, then you can find more on social media at the Woodsboro Pod. And you can find me on social media too at This Is Alex James.